Built for structured logging, Seek lets you filter and exclude events by type, search by event properties, build dashboards, and configure alerts in seconds. Seek helps you troubleshoot and resolve issues more efficiently than ever before. Available as a simple Windows installer or Docker image, try Seek for free now at datalust.co/SEQ. That's datalust.co/SEQ. Hey friends, I'm Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today we're chatting with Tricia Sinclair. She's the D365 customer service lead for Europe at Avanade. How are you?
I'm doing well, Scott. Hi.
Thanks for hanging out with me. One of the things that you're doing, as well as the many, many things that you're working on, is the Power Platform School. You're a big fan of all things 365 and all things that have the word power in front of it, because it appears to me, and looking at your team, that you like empowering others. Is that true?
This is very true. Like, one of the things I do love doing is ensuring that we all, and when I say we all, like, we all have the opportunity to shine. And of course, one of the ways that we can do that is enabling people who really want to break into tech. And we can do that through the power of the Power Platform.
Okay, so most of the folks that listen to my show are programmers or techies of some kind, but I think they're typically writing a lot of text. They're writing a lot of C and C sharp and F sharp and programming languages that they think of as traditionally powerful programming languages. What is the Power Platform? Where does that sit in the framework of programming that my listeners are used to?
Okay, so if I can break it down into let me try and see if I can do a history of the Power Platform in like a minute. So I actually started out in by doing C sharp and Java and stuff like that. That was a while back. I won't do my age. But of course, with CRM, most of the ways that we wrote and extended what you call traditionally Microsoft CRM was through C sharp, was through VB. That then changed when we actually moved away from being a very IT-centric product, slowly towards moving to a more business-oriented product, which basically meant that a lot of the things that we used to have to code to extend became more configuration in the product, and gradually what you have what's now known as the Power Platform, which is actually more of a, I call it a new modern take on what was historically CRM. So a lot of the things that we used to have to code, we don't actually have to do that anymore. Now you actually find, like, you have to code the really complex scenarios, more integration stuff, etc. So all the things that we're used to as a developer, it's wrapped up into the power of the Power Platform.
Okay. And I've heard terms like low code, no code. I've heard other terms that I find confusing, like a citizen coder. I know you have some feelings about those that may not necessarily be all positive.
Yeah. So I totally get the push for citizens developer. But I think when we talk about citizens developer, it kind of removes half the people that really should be looking at the Power Platform. The citizen developer moniker came through Microsoft's marketing mechanisms to try to explain what the Power Platform was able to achieve. And that is true. It's able to allow people who are more business-centric to create their own solutions. So, of course, we all know the old Excel sheet that, you know, Becky would create to do like order admin, stuff like that, and share it with her colleagues, and they would all build on it. And they want to replace that. They want something that's more snazzy, that's something that's more easy to use. So they can now create a Power App and do that. And that's actually what a lot of them did. They're known as citizen developers because they're not from a development background, but yet they're able to create something that otherwise would have in the past taken a long time to do and would need a lot of input from different IT guys saying, actually, no, you can't have that. Actually, yes, no, you know what I mean? So that's where the term citizen developer came from. And that's valuable. But it basically meant that developers looked at it and they're like, but that's not then for me. So I'm just going to keep on doing my C#, doing my JavaScript, doing my own thing. And they don't really look and see, okay, the actual benefit of the Power Platform is also applicable to them as well. And now what we're seeing is a shift where Microsoft are trying to point out that actually Power Platform is also for pro devs as well.
Mm-hmm. Even that term, though, pro devs, is kind of has a problem there, because when I was writing in 1995, in Access 95, I was writing macros, I was dragging and dropping text boxes, and it was ultimately one of those text boxes over data type applications. Today, you might have said I was a citizen developer or a business developer, but the result was I shipped an app. It was done with all the goal of being professional and being appropriate as any other app. It just happened to be written in Microsoft Access. I don't think I would want to not say I was not a pro. Like, to call someone a pro dev is to imply that the other side of that coin is not professional.
Yeah, actually, you're so right. I think you just use these terms because they've been coined, right? Citizen dev versus pro dev. But what that has done is it's created two sides of a coin, you know? But to be honest, we're all actually doing the same thing using different tools.
Yeah, exactly. So those kind of things make me think then, are we creating an artificial, for lack of a better word, caste system when we have these different tools, when in fact it's just which tool is right for the job, regardless of who I decide to identify as a developer?
Literally, that is the actual thing. Like, it is really which tool is right for the job. I can give you examples of, because my current role, I talk to people a lot about, of course, D365 customer service. But one of the modules, the apps that we use, or the solutions that we use to extend and enhance customer service, is Power Virtual Agent, which of course is a part of the Power Platform. We don't always use Power Virtual Agents. There's some instances where it's just not going to fit. We have to use, you know, the Azure Bot framework, which of course is coded. But what a lot of people don't seem to realize is that they work together. The Power Virtual Agent is literally just something that applies on top of the Azure Bot framework. You're actually just creating code but through like a user interface. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It almost seems like if it's not overly hard and baroque, not broke, but baroque in the complexity, then a developer will say, well, that's a pro developer because it's hard. And almost as if a developer will reject things. If it's easy, I'm not going to do it. So it's got to be difficult and complicated and make me jump through some hoops. And the Power Platform is enabling a new generation of people to do all kinds of new stuff. And some people will just reject it because it's just too darn easy to make a great app these days.
I find that really sad because honestly, like in my time now, my time is precious. I do not want to be sitting down trying to figure something out for 30 minutes that I could do in 5 minutes with a Power App. There's sometimes, yes, you're not going to be able to build it with a Power App and you're going to have to use code. And I would rather focus on that small, minute piece of the solution where I'd need to use code rather than have to basically spend like weeks building something. Like I don't have that time. And to be honest, if people have that time, great. That's awesome.
Yeah. You know, one thing though, that as with all abstractions, with layers of abstraction, when they start to leak, you see what's underneath. I have found that I will be doing something in the Power Platform. I'll be writing a Power App perhaps, or maybe I'll do a Power Automate flow. And then I'll hit a wall. Like I can do something. Now I can't do that. And I have to drop down a little lower than I would have expected. And now I'm writing an Azure function in C#. Are you seeing solutions or people moving to maybe solve that problem? Is that a problem or is that just me that feels that way?
No. It is a problem. And that's an example of where we have used like Power Virtual Agent and Azure Bot framework in the past, because the typical requirement from a customer would be, I want to be able to create bots by myself, you know? But we all know customer requirements are never really that easy, are they? So what we've had to do is we've had to solution things in a way that allows us to use the Azure Bot framework. We might wrap it up in a skill to allow them to see it in PVA. And then they can create, you know, and extend it in PVA as they want to. But our code, our complex piece is wrapped up in that skill using Azure Bot framework. So this is a good example of where the business is now working with us to actually extend the journey. And that happens all the time.
Yeah, once I figure out what that layer is and what the appropriate level of abstraction is, I can enable the abstraction, the power abstraction on the top to do whatever I want to do. Exactly. But I've felt that sometimes, whether with all the things that has the word power in front of it, sometimes I hit a wall and then I suddenly have to drive stick shift from driving an automatic. And I found that to be frustrating.
I don't want to call them citizen developers anymore because we understand citizen developers, pro devs, probably not the best term. But from a business perspective, people who are in the business creating apps, they will tend to hit walls. Not only that, but they'll build the solution up until a point. One of the other challenges that I found is that when it gets to that point, no one discusses with the business, that sometimes you kind of need to navigate away from the standard Canvas app that you're thinking. And now it's time to consider a model-driven app, because now you really need to think about the security of your data, the actual impact of, like, you know, all the things that you're building that's actually native in a model-driven app. Like, we're not having those discussions with the business because we're still really, Power Platform is still in its infancy, I would say, where people are still getting familiar with what it's capable of. And therefore, we're putting so much time on what is a Canvas app, but we're not really, like, but there are other people who are now ready to hear what's next because they've exhausted the app that they've built already.
Can you expand a little bit on that term Canvas app? Is that a term I'm not familiar with? I'm imagining dropping controls on a screen where it's like screen first development versus model first development. That was my interpretation of what
you
just said.
Correct. You're absolutely right. So when you think of a Canvas app, you're thinking about like a blank canvas, right? And you could have different data points. Like you could have data from, let's say, you know, Excel, SharePoint, Dataverse, like SAP, like data from different systems, and you want to be able to input this data, but you also want to be able to visualize this data, and you can have different controls, for example, like, you know, a date control, whatever, you drag and drop it and you link the data to the app. That's a Canvas app, whereas a model-driven app, it's basically based on the data that you have. Now, a lot of when you think of CRM, we had in the past, CRM is a model, a first party. When I say first party, I mean a Microsoft provided model driven app. That's actually what CRM is. So people have actually been using the Power Platform for a very long time, but they just probably haven't realized it. But that's really what Dynamics is. Dynamics is a first party, aka Microsoft provided model driven app.
Yeah, that's a great point. The model, in a CRM perspective, the model comes first. The screens may represent the model. They may represent a view model or a projection of the model that may change. But ultimately, Dynamics and CRM and all those things, the model is the authoritative source of truth. Exactly. And if you design your stuff canvas first or screen first, you can get into trouble very, very quickly.
Right. And then the thing is, because like... How do I put it? It's kind of tricky because from a Microsoft driven model driven app, or I call it first party model driven app, the challenge that people have is when they hear, okay, actually that does sound like what I want, they run away from it because the licensing. I'm not going to go into licensing, but the licensing, people run away from it because they think that it's going to be cheaper to stick with the Canvas app. But it's actually not in some instances, because the effort to build out and extend using the Canvas app and try to bring in all the different functionality and features that's already there, it doesn't make sense.
Mm. At the end of the day, your customer has to be at the center of everything you do. This starts with the right customer data strategy, as well as the right foundation to solve the challenges that typically inhibit the success of your company, such as data quality, data governance, and connectivity. mParticle is your real-time customer data infrastructure that helps you accelerate your data strategy by cleansing, visualizing, and integrating your customer data from anywhere to anywhere. Ultimately, better data leads to better decisions, better customer experiences, and better outcomes. See why the best brands choose mParticle. Go to mParticle.com. That's mParticle.com. When I think about the word power, I think about Power Apps and the Canvas-related stuff, but it's becoming, as you said, it's a little bit nascent, but it's becoming a whole family of products. And sometimes someone might put the word power in front of something and it fits into the family, and sometimes they may not. At the Power Platform School, this is a group that you have run by a dedicated group of individuals within the Microsoft community to enable people to learn about the Power Platform. What are you teaching within the Power family of stuff? And can you put some of those things into context for me?
So what we teach and educate is all the modules that are currently available in the Power Platform. But what we do is we actually start off by educating them about the data, because of course, everything is based on the data. The data is so important. So we actually have a data in a day session. We also have Power Apps. So we then talk about Canvas apps. We actually split the sessions for Canvas app and model-driven apps because, to be honest, those are two different concepts, and they're two very important concepts that we think that everyone should know and be aware of. So explaining to them, okay, what Canvas apps is, how it works. We talk about Power Automate, how Power Automate helps you to automate processes, right? And talk about different connectors that you're able to use. And then we talk about Power BI. Power BI is always the trickiest one because, to be honest, like, you really need to understand a lot about not just the data, but data cleansing and going into like the detail of the data. So it's kind of like top and tail with data, but that's pretty much the whole journey of the Power Platform that we take them through. And then at the end, we actually have like a lovely hackathon where they build a really cool solution using the Power Platform.
Do the people who come into your Power Platform School, are they already coders? Are they already like pro Office users? Like, I always felt like if you're great at Excel or Word, if you've written a macro, then you're a perfect Power Platform candidate.
Yeah. Well, we actually started off by saying you don't need experience in tech. That's where we started out. And that was 3 years ago. Since then, we've learned it's actually better to have a little bit of experience, to be honest. So the actual criteria to join the school has changed. So now we basically ask if you have experience using Excel or PowerPoint. If you have experience with PowerPoint or Excel, you will do well. Because Excel, you understand formulas. PowerPoint, you understand the drag drop off the screen and how to actually position or design it, which of course you need from a Canvas app perspective.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that if a person has a systems thinker, like I think I've talked about this before on the show, that we have everyone's trying to learn to code. And I've always felt that it's not about the code, it's about the system. So to your point about preferring model-driven development versus Canvas-driven development, it seems like you're on the same page.
Yeah, absolutely. Most of the time when you actually, even if you remove Power Platform and just think of a standard solution, a standard requirement that a customer might have, you actually, as a developer, should spend most of your time understanding the requirement. And then, of course, you don't have pseudocode, not for any reason. You have pseudocode so you can draw out and understand the logic of what you're going to need to then build for that solution. This is all kind of a logical process, a logical way of developing. But what this allows you to do is allows you to think and reduce the amount of defects that you could actually otherwise have. Because this is when the closer to the left or the closer to before you code, you can actually identify potential defects and clarify things. By the time you start to code, it should literally just be, you know, very straightforward. And it's a very similar thing to model-driven apps as well, where you really understand the requirement, you draw the things out, you create the data model, and you basically set things up in terms of the process. To be honest, you can do that with a Canvas app as well.
There's Power Apps, which I think is the one that everyone thinks about when they think about Power, you know, the Power family of things. And then there's other smaller things, but the Power Automate, or what I used to think of as Microsoft Flow, seems like the most powerful kind of unspoken thing. Like if there was a gateway drug into Power Apps, for me, it's not making the UIs, it's automating stuff for the business. Do you agree?
Absolutely. It's interesting, but Power Automate actually is applicable in every single Power platform app, like Power Apps, you can extend using Power Automate. Power Virtual Agent doesn't actually do anything at the moment without Power Automate. Literally, you cannot do anything without Power Automate, in Power Virtual Agent. You've also got, well, Power BI less so. Power BI is, of course, like a standalone. You can actually have Power Apps in it, but it's standalone. Power Automate, though, sits by itself. And most businesses run several different flows. And of course, you have now RPA, which you can also have, which is desktop driven, and of course, available in Windows. Is it Windows 10 by standard, which basically means that a lot more people have access to this. So it is the most powerful, in my opinion, the most powerful tool out of all the different Power platform tools. That's the one that's used across. And that's the one that is, has most impact.
Yeah. We on my team, along with James Montemagno, who works on my team, have used Power Automate to do so many things that were just tedious, keeping the lights on business work. You know, like once a week, somebody goes into Excel. Once a week, somebody goes into OneDrive and moves these files around. There's so much boring work. We've now got a policy on our team that if we do something twice, you make an automate flow to not ever have to do that again. And the connectors that are plugged in are amazing. One of the most, you'll love this example. When we do a video, we make a piece of content like a YouTube for the community, we'll put a link to the YouTube in Azure DevOps because we use Azure DevOps to manage our lives. And one of the things we found ourselves doing was wanting to get all of the views, the number of views for each video. So we have a connector and a Power Automate flow that goes through and loops through all of our DevOps stuff, finds YouTube links, then it calls the YouTube API, gets the views, and then updates a field in DevOps. So DevOps always knows for each card that has a video how many people watched it, and it keeps it up to date automatically. That was all done manually and it was horribly tedious. And now it's just magical.
That's epic. You don't want to know what I did with mine. I don't even know if
you... Hopefully you made your life better.
I did. You know, like, okay, let me tell you. So obviously I'm single, right? And everybody knows you have to use, like, well, you don't have to, but most people use dating apps. And I hate swiping.
Oh, no.
I hate swiping. Like, it just frustrates me. So what I did...
Did you automate your dating life?
I did.
That's actually about the coolest thing that a Power Platform teacher could do, is to Power Automate their dates. Do you have to go on the date or does the platform go for you?
I really wish it could. But what I took it as far as sending the first message using PVA. So I wrote a Power app using a Canvas app, and I kind of reverse engineered the API for Tinder, created a custom connector using Power Automate that will pull my matches into the Canvas app. And then I used the on the load of the app. It then went and used the Face API to kind of pull back using the Face, the first picture, to store it in Dataverse based on, like, you know, do they have hair? What color is their hair? You know, what color eyes do they have? What ethnicity? Like, it had all of that tracked. And then, but I, of course, GDPR, I took out the name of the person, you know, and just had, like, the job title and the bio, because it would review the bio to identify keywords that I didn't want, so that it was conscious of. And then it basically would dynamically show a red flag. And then as I basically, I trained a model. So I had AI in it as well. So I trained a model based on, like, my actual swiping. So it knew, okay, what am I saying yes and no to? Because I did a bulk, like I could like bulk select and say no. And then the model understood who I was saying yes and no to, so that it could basically just proactively match for me. And then, so I didn't have to swipe anymore. It was literally just kind of saying yes and no. And then if we matched, it would then, using Power Virtual Agent, automatically just say hello to the person. But this is where I got stuck using the Power Platform, because I couldn't listen out for the response.
That is awesome. And it's missing only one thing. The question is then, how can you detect if the person that you might potentially date appreciates that you built that? You know, is there a keyword? Do you have to have Power Platform in the Tinder profile, or can we somehow have an AI determine that they're going to think that is as awesome as we, the Handsome Minutes listener?
To be honest, like, there's one person I did meet. I actually did meet someone through that, and they found out what I was doing because they were like, is this a bot? Is this a joke? And I was like, no, it's me. Hi. So there's one person that kind of realized that actually there is something going on here. And we still talk to this day. I did this 2 years ago, and we still talk to this day. He's a good friend of mine now. So, yeah.
See, that's good. That can be used for other things in our social lives. In a time of COVID, certainly an AI can help us meet people that are our kind of people.
Exactly. So the thing is, like, our platform isn't necessarily, it is really for business, but if you're learning, if you're just starting out, because I did this to kind of prove the whole point of the extent of what I could use Power Platform for, because there's no better way of telling people in university like what you can do than bringing a dating bot to them. And that's actually what we did. That's literally what we did it for. It's like, okay, here, guys. But it kind of got them excited. It got them interested, right? It's fine. It's great.
You know, the thing is, though, what's great about that is it's an example of you identified a problem, you thought about the system by which that problem exists, and you solved that. And when you make a cute demo app, that's one thing. But when you solve a real world life problem, I'll give you another. Here's a stupid one. I didn't use Power App for it, but I bet you could already design this in your head. My children don't take out the trash, and I have this thing called a DAC board, DAK board. It's basically a Raspberry Pi inside of a monitor, and I hang it on the wall, and it shows the family's calendar and the weather, and it's kind of like a monitor that hangs on the wall. So the children don't take out the trash, but I have a layout of the house, the floor plan. Mm-hmm. And I know how to make heat maps, and I have all these little Raspberry Pis or like small devices that have sensors that will tell you the proximity of something. If you take the proximity sensor and you put it at the top of the lid of the trash can, you can tell how close the trash is to the top, and then make a heat map that shows where in the house the trash is currently overflowing, and then text the child with an automate to let them know they need to go and let the trash out. And then, you know, no movies tonight. The trash is overflowing in the house.
That's epic. I love it.
Why not, right? Like, why aren't we doing these problems with the Power Platform?
I think that everybody, like, it doesn't matter if you're a business user or a tech user. These are really good ways in which you can basically... Because one thing I always say, right? If you want to be more productive at work, you really also should have productivity at home as well. And it helps. It translates across. If only the licensing agreement would allow that, but it does translate across.
Well, so when you're thinking about teaching new people, and you said that you think that people should be a little bit technical to join your school, but it also gets me thinking about the personality of a programmer. Like we have this image in our mind about what a programmer looks like, but now we're changing and realizing that it's not about how they look, it's about how they behave. There are non-programmers, non-coders, non-pro or non-citizen coders, but they are coders because they're making creative solutions to systemic problems. They just don't know yet that they're coders. That's my theory.
I don't know. The thing is, for the Power Platform School, you don't need to be technical. You need to have experience in Excel and PowerPoint, to be honest.
Sure.
You need to have that background. A lot of functional people have that. And I would say that there is a slight difference between someone that's functional and technical.
What do you mean by that, functional and technical?
Functional for me basically is more aligned to understanding and able to interact with a customer to pull more information out of them.
An analyst,
right? Now, analysts are but they are more and more aligned to manipulating the system to achieve what the customer wants. Because, to be honest, the Power Platform enables that. They don't need to know how to code. Now, a coder, a developer, is really, for me, they really understand. They understand what you can do from a UI. They understand what you can do through the Power Platform. They understand how to extend the Power Platform and extend the the UI to achieve what the customer wants. So there is going to be a breakpoint to what a functional person can do and to where, and that's where they typically work together right now in several projects.
Right. And I think the person who would be the most successful, regardless of whether they are a coder that writes in text or a Power Platform developer who writes maybe less text, is can they visualize the business process, the problem, and figure out with whatever tools that are available to them how to architect an appropriate solution that may include all power stuff or all code or something in between.
In between, yeah. And people like that, I feel like kind of unicorns nowadays. Because you have people that are like so like focused and just I focused on this is what I know, this is all I know, and therefore this is what I'm going to give you. And then you have people who are really open to hearing what other people have to say, open to self-learning, open to improving, and understand that, yeah, what I knew 10 years ago, 5 years ago, it changes every 6 months. It changes every month. Let me see what else is out there. How else can I potentially resolve this issue? Those people are unicorns and we should really encourage them.
Very cool. Well, I appreciate you, Tricia Sinclair, and the work that y'all are doing at the Power Platform School. Folks can check it out at powerplatformschool.com. Thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Anytime. Thanks, Scott.
We've been chatting with Tricia Sinclair, D365 Customer Service Lead for Europe for Avanade. You can check out the work that they're doing at powerplatformschool.com and check her out on Twitter and everywhere that you can find someone online. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.